she is going to be the poster child.
Really? That would be fun.
Good morning. I'm going to go ahead and open the House Interim Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness, and I'm going to open an informational meeting. Or actually, I'm going to close the informational meeting. That was very informative. And I'm going to open an organizational meeting. And first off, we just want to have, for any folks who weren't with us during the regular session, just quickly have the committee members introduce themselves, and we can start to my right with Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Huffman from the Dalles. Good to see everybody today.
I'm Deborah Boone from the beautiful Upper Left Coast.
Julie Parrish from West Lynn.
Elizabeth Edwards, Committee Services.
Hey. Brad Witt, House District 31.
Go ahead.
Columbia County, Northern Washington County, and that portion of Multnomah County along Highway 30 from Sobeys Island to Industrial Northwest Portland.
Sal Escobar, Representative District 6, Medford.
And I am Shamia Fagan, and I represent House District 51, which is North Clackamas and East Multnomah County, outer southeast Portland, southwest Gresham, a little Laboring, Damascus, most of Happy Valley, and some unincorporated Clackamas County. So good morning. Representative Matthews is stuck in 205 traffic, so we're just going to get started, but hopefully he will be here soon. So with that, I will entertain a motion regarding committee rules.
Chair Fagan, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Yeah. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Excuse Matthews. The motion passes and the rules are adopted. With that, I'm going to close the organizational meeting, and I'm going to open an informational meeting on an update for ODVA's priorities and implementation of no wrong door laws. And we'll hear from Director Cameron Smith.
Good morning, Vice Chair Fagan, Vice Chair Parrish, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, and I am the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And Chair Matthews, I'm glad I did not commute down with you on 205 today. I came down early and escaped the mess. It feels like we were just in session here in July, but it is great to be back before you and great to have the legislature back in the building. And it's my privilege to help give an update of what we've been doing implementing legislation and making changes over the last 2.5 months. And I know that every generation or every time feels like they are unique, but I honestly believe this time is unique, with a nation striving to provide services and benefits to four generations of veterans across five major wars, with World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War, and our most recent generation in Iraq, Afghanistan. That, to me, feels unprecedented, and it's our privilege to help provide those services to our veterans and their families. As you know, we have 320,000-plus veterans in Oregon. That's about 1 in 10 Oregonians in our population. And we remain a country at war, with thousands still deployed to Afghanistan and around the world. And it's not easy to always remember that, even in our line of work. But what brings it home to me is the funerals that we still continue to have. And this summer we had our most recent casualty, an Army specialist, Nick Welch from Mill City. His family lives in Salem now. He died of an IED blast. Three of his fellow soldiers died immediately in Afghanistan. He survived, was transported back to Germany, made it all the way back to D.C., where his family was with him before he succumbed to his injuries. But it just brings home the reality of that work that we do, serving our Gold Star families, serving the thousands more that return home injured from and impacted from their service. And even those unscathed and who are strengthened by their service, still having to navigate that challenging reintegration home back to their communities. So our shared vision is that service members, veterans, and their families thrive in Oregon. Service members, veterans, and their families thrive in Oregon. That is a huge mission. We have a diverse population of veterans, every era, every age, gender, ethnicity, urban and rural. The diverse needs that they face across healthcare, education, employment, housing, and more. How we've approached this work, and we've emailed all of you and the governor our advisory committee's annual report that we've entitled A New Cadence. It's not just about getting ODVA and our programs in step. This work is larger than any one agency or organization. Our subtitle is We Must Align Veterans Care and Benefits Across Oregon. And this is our advisory committee's annual report. We have had a 9-member advisory committee body since 1945 when the agency stood up, and we've been proud over the last 6 months to really re-engage our advisory committee that has 9 veterans from across Oregon to really be able to connect us to the community and give us their honest feedback, advice, and counsel. We've got a great chair and Air Force member officer, Mary Mayer, retired Air Force officer, and she is going to drive that vision for us and truly reconnect us to the community and give us their best advice and counsel. So some of the strategies that got called out in this report, it goes across our, in making sure that veterans thrive in Oregon. It's going to be ODVA's core programs as one component. It's going to be the partnerships that we drive with our larger partnerships across the community, and then what we call outreach, education, and awareness, both to our veterans and our partners. So on our core programs, as you all are very aware, we've got our claims and counseling that's strengthened by our partnership with the counties. We have our home loan program, and then we have the Veterans Home in the Dalles, and the second one that we're building out in Lebanon. Just briefly on some of those core areas, in claims and counseling, there is so much work going on at the federal level, shifting to an electronic claims system to make sure that we don't have that backlog of claims that we currently have in the system. And that's going to have a heavy effect on what our counties and state systems submit up. So making sure that we have an electronic claims system, we finally have our last of our counties with Clackamas coming online with Vetrospect, which are our cloud-based system, to make sure that we can track our claims so that we can get folks their disability, their pensions, and into the healthcare system. We are beginning that slow decline on the backlog. We had Secretary Shinseki out here at the end of August, and it does feel like we've turned the corner on some of those systems. There is no one answer. But I believe that we have turned that corner, and it's going to be a partnership effort across our system to reduce that backlog. On the home loan program, we got some great legislation out of the last session to give us some of the flexibility we needed to target offering VA home loans in addition to our own core program. With a strategic plan in place and looking at some new hires, and with the rising interest rate environment, that's actually going to be helpful for our home loan program. So we're excited to try to reinvigorate that program that speaks goes back to 1945 and is the original reason that the agency stood up and has helped fund so many of our other core veteran services. On the Veterans Home front, the Dalles is going great and remains a great institution, and we have the second facility being built out currently, and we expect for the Lebanon facility, and we expect that one to begin operations kind of phased in approach at the end of 2014 after that facility is built out. And across all of our programs, it's going to come down to our team, our people. We are a long-tenured agency. We had about 20% of our staff retire this summer, both great administrators that you're familiar with, like Tom Mann, and people across our organization. And we've had folks that have worked at ODVA for longer than I've been alive. So it is very much a long-tenured agency. But bringing some great folks on board, Eric Belt, who comes to us from Washington County, will be taking over our Veteran Services Division. He's led that team, which has been an innovative team of Veteran Service Officers in Washington County, and has also been the president of the Association of Oregon County's Veteran Service Officers Association. He's going to help build that partnership across our county state system in a powerful way. And then Lori Skillman, coming to us from the real estate agency, not a veteran herself, but a true expert in the legislative process, the implementation of rules in our internal policies. She hit the ground running, I think, on September 9th and is already making even our small silos that we have within ODVA. She is going to be some glue across our organization, really strengthening what we do. So beyond our people, we need to make sure they've got the resources, both from a budget perspective, the training and the tools to achieve their missions. But then we're also looking at how do we truly hold ourselves themselves accountable with a performance management system that crosses those silos, knowing that, you know, really laying out what are our core processes within each of our programs, what are we going to measure, who are the owners for those measures, and recognizing, let's just take the home loan program and the home loan program manager. Ultimately, the success of that program will rely on the cross-silo effort, both from HR, from communications, from the director's office, from finances, in addition to the core programs on claims and within the home loan program. But beginning to measure across our organization, are we hitting the mark on those key metrics to begin to hold ourselves truly accountable for our work? Even with that great team and great programs in place, we know the programs at ODVA don't speak to every need that a veteran has. So our partnerships are essential. That goes across state agencies, and we'll hear later today with some partnerships on DMV and DHS. We've got strong links down to the counties, up to the federal VA, which is our $150 billion behemoth. Links also to our tribal community. But the central challenge has truly been, we know our veterans won't thrive and their families won't thrive in Oregon unless the community is wrapping their arms around them. That speaks not just to intergovernmental coordination or cross-state coordination, but how are we truly driving the public-private partnerships that we know are essential for success in this space? I believe that's the case in any of our program areas. We've talked about it in emergency management. We've talked about it in education and public safety. But I believe through the lens of veterans, we can craft a model on public-private partnership, but it's essential not to overpromise and underdeliver. It can quickly, because, you know, having an overarching force similar to joining forces, joining community forces that the National Guard has right now, pulling in those diverse partners, I believe that model currently is on life support, and we need to reinvigorate that model. It's going back to basics, but not over-promising in terms of having subcommittees focused on every single level across healthcare, education, employment, transportation, housing, rural Oregons, women veterans. You can quickly overwhelm from a staffing, resource, and budget perspective, but we have to have that joining community forces model reinvigorated, and then some key targeted efforts that we think we can staff and that we can support. Currently, we have a great work group working on suicide prevention, promoting health, and preventing suicide. It's Suicide Prevention Month. This month, Oregon leads the nation, unfortunately, in suicides generally, and veterans and military families are about 26% of those suicides. So we've had a core group working on that particular issue across the counties, across our state system, across the federal VA, and across our nonprofits and our crisis lines. But being able to feed that work group into a strengthened kind of overarching council will be something that we're navigating going forward on that partnership effort. And lastly, on outreach, this is both education and awareness to all of our veterans about what their benefits are, but also to those cross partners, making sure, just the links that we've built across the suicide prevention and the healthcare side over the last 2.5 months have been impressive, both them informing us about their programs and us bringing that military and veterans experience to their work. And on outreach, it's going to come down to a centralized database. We have to know where our veterans are. No business or no nonprofit can survive if they don't know where their clients are and how to reach them. We'll hear a little bit more in terms of the innovations that partnering with DMV and DHS to make sure that there is, we can say it's no wrong door or every door is the right door in a positive way. Once we have a better handle on where our veterans are, and making sure we don't have siloed databases across even just ODVA or the federal VA system, really trying to bring 21st communications to our outreach and awareness. That's going to be everything from our gov delivery and email subscriptions that folks can sign up for, our news blog on Facebook, and other online partnerships with the county websites. Sometimes the counties just have a very static county veteran service officer website that basically is just a business card. We've bought website domain names for all of the county veteran service officers at this point, and it built out at a very flexible level and rolled out these county websites that will begin to list other services and connect back. When you Google Oregon veterans, you're going to get ODVA. As Representative Parrish knows, that online presence people pay millions of dollars to be that top of shelf mind on Google and the other search engines. Through dumb luck, we have that at Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and we need to share that with our partners and drive our veterans to their local county veteran service officers and the other work. At a more centralized vision, partnering with 211 and our crisis lines to make sure we have resource referral through those existing systems. Continuing efforts on social media marketing. We've got a great 40-page benefit magazine that lists everything across the state, local, and federal system. And we are, you know, we're reaching 60, measuring, we can actually see that we're reaching 62,000 veterans a month now through all of these different ventures. Beyond that online presence, I think there's going to be a fascinating discussion to come as we build out the governor's budget in 2014 and look to the larger session in 2015. Where is the sweet spot, both for our counties, our state, and our federal system? Currently, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs still provides county veteran service officer support to Marion and Polk County. There's some interesting discussions underway of how do we craft potentially ODVA to have more of that peer-to-peer support across women veterans, rural veterans, tribal veterans, our aging veterans, our student veterans, in a way that potentially downsizes our direct claims work and potentially strengthens our county partnerships at the same time. The peer-to-peer model is a fascinating one and one that will pay dividends going forward. So that covers the overview that I wanted to give today. We remain blessed and privileged to work in this space and partner with all of you, and happy to take any questions that you have here today.
Wow. Well, Cameron, let me just say on behalf of the committee, I mean, when Director Willis was leaving and was announcing his retirement, I think a lot of us were like, where do we go next? And, you know, the fact that you're at the helm, I don't think there's any doubt that ODVA is going to move onward and upward. And I'm excited about the future of what holds for ODVA and Oregon's vets. And I think you're making a lot of great steps, and you're going at a very quick pace. I commend you for that, and wish you the best of luck. I'll see if there's any questions or comments. Yes, Representative Boone.
And I'll just second what you just said, but Cameron, and excuse me if you did send something like this and I didn't get it, but is there a way we could get a copy of your summary of this report?
And Chair Matthews, Representative Boone, I think we'll resend it to your staff electronically, and I think for both the House and Senate, we'll end up printing out copies and make sure to hand deliver those. The only piece in this, it had a great cover letter from our outgoing chair, Kevin Owens, from the South Coast, but next year, really trying to distill this down into really a two-page executive summary, knowing that you guys are all busy and have a lot of different focus areas. So it's some to, you know, we tried to keep it as tight as possible, but about 10 pages that we'll make sure to get to you.
Just a quick follow-up.
Yes,
yeah, I just wanted to commend you for that. And I get asked a lot. We just had our stand down in Clatsop County this weekend, and it was well attended. And everybody always worries about the numbers. And I went to see, you know, what all they had this time, and it was pretty impressive. And so while I'm there, I get people, okay, thank you, thanks. I can find it on OLIS, so, you know, don't worry about me. But I get asked often, you know, can you send me a brief summary or whatever of what you've done? And because I'll tell people the number of pages of bills that we've been kind of working our way through for the last several years from the task force. And this is really great to hear this. I took a few notes on my own, and I thought I'm going to miss something if I write while you're talking.
And Chair Matthews, Representative Boone, at the end of this report, it has a great summary of the which is the 2013 session and all the bills and our overarching budget, and really gives a great perspective on just where we are as a veterans community demographically. Everything gets messaged as Iraq and Afghanistan, but still 37% of our population is the aging Vietnam generation. So just a lot of great info in here.
Well, and I wanted to just a quick comment on that. When I see you guys here, we've seen the dogs, you know, the service dogs in committee here, and a guy came to the stand down and brought his dog, and they had a little tiny corner of one of the booths, and, you know, for that program, and it was great to see somebody who'd been connected, I guess, since April or May, he'd had this dog, and it was like the poster kid for this program. It was amazing. And I told him if he ever needed a dog sitter, I'd take her. Little Ellie, she's a great dog. So anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cameron, you'll probably recall, may have been our final hearing of the session, and Tom was talking about a lot of things, but he brought up the use of volunteers at the County Veteran Service Office level, and he and I had had discussions about that ongoing and what Wasco County, Hood River County was trying to do with volunteers. And, you know, Tom admitted that he was opposed to that for a long time, but as he saw the benefit there, he really became a believer. And I just wanted to make sure between the transition between Tom and Eric that that message got through, and whatever it was that Tom intimated he was going to start working on as far as using that Wasco County as a model to try to allow for more volunteer work within the VSO offices. And so I didn't want that to get lost because it is pretty powerful.
So Chair Matthews, Representative Huffman, I've been impressed with that model. There were some initial concerns, I think, in terms of the sensitive information that flows through our claims and counseling and some of the HIPAA and privacy concerns. But I think that's we can navigate those concerns in a way. Our communities and our citizens want to help veterans and military families, whether on giving donations or of their time. And that Wasco County Veteran Service Office has been strengthened by that strong citizen engagement on that front. So I think holding that up as a model and taking that, you know, potentially having a presentation at our County Veteran Service Officer Conference in the fall or the next one down the line, we have never figured that out at a state level. You know, how do we tap into the Willamette veterans that are going through law school or getting their degree? How do we tap further into the work study program through the VA that pays to have, you know, outside source pays to have a staffer on your team? So I think not only encouraging it at the county level, but figuring out how we crack that nut just in our own shop as well.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Smith? And then, go ahead. Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just one more. On the backlog, I had a town hall with Senator Merkley last week, and we were talking about the backlog, you know, from a federal perspective, from a state perspective, and I've read a couple of articles that talk about the progress being made. The articles I've read didn't really get into detail about where the progress is being made. I don't know if it's handling new claims in a quicker manner. There are still, I talked to a lot of people, and I can attest personally that there are appeal claims that are 5-plus years old. And in my mind, that's just unbelievable that any state agency would leave a veteran or whatever agency it is, leave a constituent hanging for 5-plus years. It's just hire the people and get it done, whatever it takes. It's just craziness. And so I don't know where the progress is. I understand there's some IT work that has been completed that may facilitate that process, but it's frustrating. As a disabled veteran, speaking personally, it's frustrating to be hanging for so long because I got one claim hanging out here waiting on another claim to be settled, and when you're waiting on that settlement 5 years and your condition degrades, it's frustrating. And hopefully, my assumption has been, and I'm hoping, that the silver lining to all this is that they're taking care of the Iraqi and Afghan veterans' claims quicker and up front, you know, maybe a more critical emergency situation, and that would be a good thing. I don't know that for a fact, but at least that would be a silver lining.
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Huffman, it's incredibly frustrating, but it has been years in the making, I believe, and is turning that ship of state of the big VA, the second largest bureaucracy, and often sometimes you need those connections to DOD in terms of getting those medical records handed over electronically from the get-go. Making sure that there's no one easy answer, and it is frustrating. Some of the strategies they're bringing to it are on that electronic claims processing. making sure that fully developed claims is emphasized so that everything gets packaged together and the veteran, the CVSO, and that power of attorney say, we don't have any other evidence. This is what we have. But a lot of it goes back to the complexity of veterans law. When you look at what our CVSOs and our veteran service officers and the service orgs have to understand and know, it's similar to the tax code in terms of that complexity. But it is where the vast majority of our citizens, when they submit their taxes and TurboTax and online and it goes up, that is what we are aiming towards. But the complexity of veterans law will never allow us to completely get there unless we reform that underlying structure. But from the service organizations and our veterans, at an individual level, extreme frustration that they're, you know, it's unacceptable that you're waiting a year, 2 years, 3 years on sometimes your claims and on your appeals. Sometimes it's longer than how long you were in the service to begin with. It's unacceptable, but Secretary Shinseki has an amazing team in place, and sometimes it's, do we give them the flexibility and the time and the space to continue on the trajectory before the politics intercede and the budgets intercede. There's a lot of confidence that we're moving in the right direction, and it's just how quickly we can get there.
Thanks for the question. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation today, Director Smith. I just saw an individual on news, I don't remember what channel it was, but he'd been waiting over 4 years and still hadn't received any satisfaction out of the VA. It's my understanding, too, that the federal VA, we're not talking about state, we're talking about federal, is backlogged in paperwork, and they're just mired down in paperwork instead of utilizing a computer system. They have stacks and stacks and stacks of paper. And I forgot, when someone showed a picture of the VA headquarters in Washington, D.C., they indicated about how much paper was in there, and it was unbelievable. I mean, we wiped out a forest, that's what's in there. And yet they still have not come to grips with that particular problem, and that's been 2 years ago, I believe, that I saw that on 60 Minutes or something like that. I myself am a disabled vet, and I remember when I was involved with it and they put me in for it, it took 18 months to get a response back from the federal VA, and they were just tickled pink with themselves that it was so fast. I mean, what if I'd have been a veteran that really needed that at the time? 18 months is not acceptable to me, and 4 or 5 years is just completely absurd. If we're going to send these people into harm's way, we need to take care of them when they come home. And I would still like to see this committee, and I appreciate the committee, you know, that every year, I think, for I don't know how many years now, we have put in a resolution to ask Congress to dedicate funding to the VA instead of discretionary funding. And thus far, 5 years, is that what it is, Mike? Because, you know, until we bridge these gaps, that, and the federal government is willing to take the initiative to change what they're doing. And of course, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expect different results. But I don't see any changes, unless there is some kind of a change underway that I'm unaware of, with the feds getting this backlog down other than hiring more people. That's not necessary if they could scan that and put it into a file. I'm beside myself that we can't do that today.
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, it is the central tension that we've been moving to that electronic claims, and how quickly are we moving to that? The original reason, you know, I think the original phrase of red tape goes back to the red tape that they would bind veterans' files with back from the Civil War eras. When the Portland Regional Office for the Federal VA moved from, I think it's the Wyatt Green Building, to First and Main, where they're housed now, they literally, I mean, it was like moving a library where Lance Corporal Schmuckatelli's file is 3 feet on a law shelf, moving that claim over, paper-based. We're still stuck in a system. They have not turned off completely the pipeline on paper-based claims, which at a federal level, results in some catch-22 scenarios where we're shipping boxes to a centralized scanning facility to make it electronic, but we are beginning to pull the trigger on a final electronic claims process that looks like it's shaping up for February 2014, which is always a little bit out, but we feel like we're moving there.
Paul?
Absolutely.
What really disturbed me was in the federal VA system, the people that are going through and approving the disabilities and the benefits, I think only 17% of them were really trained to do that. I don't get it. Why would you hire that many people and not train them? And that's a federal thing. I understand that. But the federal system needs to be turned around. And I don't know how we can do it.
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, the way I describe it is we have an inverted pyramid with $150 billion behemoth of the federal VA, the state veterans affairs in the middle with a diverse group of programs across the nation that have kind of coalesced since World War II, and then on down to sometimes in a rural county, one county veteran service officer. That fundamental inverted pyramid will not work. We will not have veterans thriving if that is how we're going to address it. And how do you truly get community-based care to match up with that system? There is more than enough work just within our own lane of what we control at ODVA and the partnerships that we can drive. We have strong voices back to our congressional partners and back to federal VA, through our national associations, through our service organizations. We need to continue to hold VA's, big VA's, feet to the fire. But I truly believe they are not the only solution. And there's so much opportunity that I believe is in our lane, that we have an expanded role at the state, not from a budget perspective or a staffing perspective, but truly in a coordination of our community-based efforts. If we never get any changes out of federal VA, I believe we can drive success for our veterans and their families through what we do here. So I'm frustrated, equally as frustrated as all of you, at some of the pace of those changes at the federal VA. But I do remain confident that they're moving in the right direction, and that has not always been the case. And I do have a lot of faith in the leadership at the helm. But turning that ship of state is not easy. Just creating change and breaking down silos in a small 80-person organization like ODVA, that has its own challenges. So I can't imagine, they have 20,000 mental health workers. They have the largest integrated healthcare system in the nation. It boggles the mind how you drive cultural change in that kind of an organization, whether from a training perspective or simply on the cultural perspective. It is a massive undertaking, but that I don't think we need to continue that message flowing up, but also give them the space to continue the direction that they're on.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thanks. Well, I think a lot of the complaints you're hearing are certainly things that you are out of your control. The federal VA being slow or whatever, that's probably not something that we can fix at the state level, obviously. But one of the things that I think we should be thinking about, as it pertains to medical records and service records, we got a letter last week that said that 5 years of Mark's service record is missing in terms of health. And I don't understand how the Army, misplaces 5 years of a service record, but apparently there's a window of time that supposedly he never worked for the Army. When we processed through the first time, we're now at the 18-month mark too, they had to confirm he had a wife for 17 years and that I hadn't been in DEERS for 17 years. So clearly those are our federal challenges. But at the state level, we have our National Guard guys. What is the relationship that can be built to help soldiers with that record keeping while they're a soldier, while they're part of the Guard, while they still have access to medical and facilities and people who are paying attention to them? And how do we, at least for our Oregon Guard guys, bridge that gap so that when they do transition out of the military, that they have those records. I mean, I think the fact that we are expecting soldiers who are, you know, an E1, E2, who's going to move out of, you know, particularly in the active scenario, where they're going to move every couple years to be the keepers of their records is nonsense to me. And so, you know, Mark has kept very diligent records, but the fact is that somehow we're still missing 5 years of records. And for somebody who's got a big file in our house of everything, I can't expect that a 19-year-old kid who joins our National Guard is paying attention to the fact that when they, you know, get injured out in training, that they need to somehow keep that record. So how do we start building, at least at the state level, for soldiers that are kind of in our control, how do we at least bridge that gap? We can do it for the 6,000 or 7,000, you know, National Guard soldiers at any given time who are in our system. I think that is something we can do.
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Parrish, at a relationship level, we've tried to build better links on the admin side, on the medical record side, and our Portland regional office for the federal VA to make sure that they have an easier accessing those records when they need to verify was it a married spouse situation, was it a claim that resulted from their military service. But at a national and federal level, it has been a major challenge integrating the DoD healthcare system with the VA system. It seems like there should be a natural handoff from one to the other, both an electronic medical record that just stays with you for the rest of your life. And that has been a tremendous challenge to get to. And that's been acknowledged by the President and Congress, and millions of dollars invested trying to crack that nut. But we're not there yet. You've nailed it. How do you ask, whether you're an officer or an enlisted, when you're getting out of the military, the last thing you're thinking about is challenges that you're going to have doing a claims work a couple years, 5 years, for our Vietnam generation, reengaging with a system finally 40 years after their service. You cannot expect them to have those records. And it becomes a sleuthing exercise to make these legal claims sometimes. So it's a major challenge.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Esquivel.
I haven't been asked a question, but I just thought, how does one go? I mean, I have 20 copies of my DD-214. An individual that calls me up that you were saying was out of the system for 40 years and they don't have a DD-214, do they just send them to the federal VA in Portland?
So I'd say either their county veteran service officer, our state veteran service officers, even the service organizations like the Legion at a state level have folks. That's usually an easily solved problem, being able to get that copy of the DD-214. There are circumstances. Are some of them... in terms of the burned fire, some of those records, is that captured DD-214s?
There was a fire in 1973 at the National Personnel Records Center that destroyed primarily Air Force records.
So there is a gap on some records due to a fire of these paper-based records in St. Louis, mostly for some Vietnam-era veterans. But, you know, we collect at the state level about a third of the DD-214s that folks, when they leave the service, say, yes, we'd like it to be sent to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and have information flow to us. But just some small steps like adding an email address to the DD-214 so that we've got that electronic link to these veterans coming out. And you can register these DD-214s with your county records office. There's a lot of different ways to capture that, but trying to institutionalize that and systemize it so it's not, again, a soldier service member worried about losing this certified copy of a DD-214 going forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along the lines of Representative Parrish, I don't recall when I went in that anybody said, you need to keep every piece of paper. I just instinctively didn't. And Mitch and Tom, when they started handling my claim years ago, they were like, wow, you're pretty rare that you have every piece of paper. Maybe we need to talk to the Adjutant General and suggest that we buy just a simple portfolio to give to every incoming soldier and have on it your records, keep something so that they'll remember, oh yeah, I'm supposed to put every piece of paper in that. When I go on sick call, a copy of that goes in the file. Something just to remind them that it's crucially important to keep every piece of paper.
And Chair Matthews, Representative Huffman, beyond that kind of on the pre-end, also on the post-end, as folks are transitioning out of the military. We have gotten a lot better at that transition assistance program, the TAP program, I think, that you're actually linking to the VA system before you've ever gotten out. So you are flagging these concerns and before you transition out, but it's still... our service members' mindset when they're leaving the military is not on this claims front, and that's culturally making sure that our leadership and our training throughout the services and the links that we can build across the VA and DOD system are going to be essential for that.
Thank you. Any further questions? Cameron, it's always a pleasure.
So Chair Matthews, members of the committee, from the questions that you raise, there is an endless amount of opportunity and challenges for us to engage on, but we just appreciate the partnership that we have with this committee, the Senate committee, and all of our partners, and don't hesitate to reach out to us going forward.
Well, thank you for that. And I want to say that part of this seemed like it reminded me a little bit of the town halls that we do, where we'll go to a town hall to talk about state policy and we end up getting kind of flooded with federal government stuff. But there is kind of that mesh. The good news is found in your report, pages 16 through 19, the 30-some bills and resolutions and memorials, the majority of which are bills, that aren't just urging Congress to do something, but the state taking action for our veterans. And I want to thank you for outlining those bills and giving us that summary, and also making it available on OLIS, thanks to Ms. Edwards. So it's out there as a document for people to access from their home computer, and they can start reading, because, to be honest, I'm very frustrated that our local media doesn't take these on as large wins for veterans. They are out there talking about things that could be done, rarely talking about the things that we have done, and our veterans get lost in the mix. And so when we go into veterans groups, they often wonder, what are you doing for us? I think that you have highlighted that well, because I think oftentimes, because we're so flooded with that other argument, we forget what we're doing for veterans. And this state is doing numerous things for veterans. There's always more to do, and it's just great to have you at the lead of the ship that's steering our right way on the right course. So thank you for your effort.
Thank you.
And with that, we will close our informational meeting on the Advisory Committee Annual Report. And we will then open up the get a status update on the implementation of what we had referred to as No Wrong Door. Actually, what we meant was all doors are open for our veterans. And that's going to highlight, I think, House Bill, is it 2421 and 2422? Great. So we will open that. And I'll call up, is it going to be Carolyn Lawson joining us? Mickey, I see you're taking the helm. Okay. And so Carolyn Lawson, Chief Information Officer for DHS and OHA. And do we want to have Amy at the same time, or do you have two separate presentations? We'll have Carolyn Lawson first.
Yes, please.
And as you know, state your name for the record if you don't mind, and thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carolyn Lawson. I am the Chief Information Officer of the Department of Human Services and at the same time the Chief Information Officer of the Oregon Health Authority. We are very excited to be here to show you a screenshot, which you're going to look at it first and say, that doesn't look really lovely. The importance of this is we are rebuilding our human services applications on a single platform. So instead of showing you the pretty screen for just the SNAP application, what I chose to do instead was open up the rules engine and show you that baked into the rules for every application going forward on this platform, which will be all of our major modernization efforts, this question around veteran service is already there. As we build forward with the additional applications, I'm happy to have you ask me again about whether or not we're collecting veterans information, and the answer is going to be yes, because it's baked into the basis of our application. We're taking this very seriously. We're just really very pleased to be engaged in this way.
Wonderful. Did you have a... You can go ahead and go first.
Well, I was just going to ask, so once you are, get this information, what's the relationship between you and ODVA in terms of how fast do they get the information and it's sent over to them? So is that like a monthly batch or is it a weekly batch, or is it, do you have to physically do it, or is it just kind of sent like a Google alert where it, you know, winds up over in their inbox somewhere that here's a new person in our system who's identified veteran? What is that going to look like?
So Chair Matthews and members of the committee, Representative Parrish, we are working with at ODVA. We're starting out with a monthly batch. As they're ready to receive files in a different way, we'll make any adjustments that they need. My favorite would be to send every individual electronically as they go through our system. It will take a little bit of time to get there, but that's our end game.
That's great. And again, I want to just take a moment to just commend you and not just DHS, but ODOT as well, and the folks that have come to the table to work on this solution and just been so willing to participate with ODVA. It has made it just a lot simpler than everybody had predicted, and it's because of the attitude you took from day one. And initially it was Derek Bradley, became Zach Reeves, and a lot of great folks just working on this issue. But thank you for approaching this not as something that, well, this is going to be very difficult, or the common answer we get, it's complicated, but actually simplifying this effort and making this effective. Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Matthews. I was going to ask if we could have Cameron come back up and tell us, once you receive the batch, where does it go, who does it go to, what do you do with it?
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Huffman, our compliments to DHS and DMV that we'll hear from shortly. They are undergoing, are you also on the healthcare side, you
yes.
said? I mean, the transformation that they're going through just within their own IT infrastructure at DHS and on the OHA front is mind-boggling. And inserting our little stick into that bicycle wheel on this small item is not an easy challenge to overcome. So we've had a little slower connection to DHS because they're undergoing that larger transformation across their whole IT system. But a great time to insert the veterans question and have you ever served in the military. There's challenges on receiving that, you know, one challenge to get that information flowing from one state agency, but as a small state agency, when you peel back the curtain behind ODVA, our IT infrastructure and our database systems are not anywhere near where they should be. You know, across our home loan program, we have some. We have across our Vets News database, we have another. And it's kind of been homegrown database solutions, but not a cohesive, and I'm sure it's the case at a lot of state agencies, even the large ones. And there's a sweet spot, I think, going forward that if we're going to be in this outreach, awareness, education business, we're going to need a database administrator coordinator whose expertise, you know, even if it's just through access or an existing program, it's no different from your campaigns and making sure you've got a connection to your constituents or in the campaign land. So no easy answers in terms of, like, the information that flows back, whether it's from DD-214s or from our partners at other state agencies. We have not been structured, both from a staffing and IT database-wise, to really be able to trickle that information out to the County Veteran Service Officers to do that follow-up and be able to see across our now cloud-based claim system that they did get that reach out. ODVA can commit to getting our Veterans Benefit Magazine, getting them offering them to sign up for Gov Delivery and tied into some of our communication efforts. But we have one person that is in charge of our training, our outreach, and our certification, and they are drowning in all kinds of requests that are coming in. And this is just the beginning of trying to bring more of a system. You know, the links that Tom Mann had in his head and was just doing because of who he was, how do you systemize that so that expertise, when it leaves the agency, is embedded within our systems, not necessarily our great people? So we're at the beginning stages of that conversation, but a powerful one that will be transformational, I think, for our work.
Chair Mathis, yes. Members of the committee, if I may, speaking probably out of turn as a CIO, he's asking for one. I'm running numbers in my head. I would need a staff of about four to do what he's talking about. He will need a lead and some support staff. If you're going to get to the place that you're talking about, having electronic records available, this is not a small lift. And so just providing probably out of turn support just for your consideration.
I can appreciate that. And you know, we have had discussions in the past about, in particular, a funding mechanism in the lottery scratch-it ticket where we could be talking about some dedicated funds that would increase your database and your IT perspective so that you could actually transfer that information. Because the problem continues. They can send you every name. If the names sit back on a back burner because we can't hold them, then we're not really meeting the goal. And the goal, I'm pleased to say, we are taking steps towards it, and we're taking them together. And I think that's the most important thing I want to make in terms of points for our veterans is they need to see these state agencies all working together on their best benefit and best behalf. And the goal is get folks to get in touch with the benefits they've already deserved and earned. And it's just, you know, and that's for them and their families to thrive in Oregon, as you said earlier. Yes, Representative Parrish.
You know, I guess I'd like to see us, our panel, work with ODVA to try to solve the kind of systems thinking of when somebody from another organization, agency, is giving you that name, you know, what is that going to look like from start to finish? For a different issue, was researching some data, and I just share with you guys a little snippet about what California has done. So California Department of Veterans Affairs has reported that by creating jobs for county veteran service officers, since 1995, CVSOs have helped return $3.65 billion for a cost to California's general fund of $38 million. So they have found a way to do what we're trying to get accomplished in terms of reaching out and finding those folks and then getting them properly delivered into the system. In fiscal year 2011-12, California garnered $346 million of new veterans benefits, which were paid directly to qualified veterans and in turn spent into the local economy. So when you think about the return on investment to the state, to our state general fund, we need to figure out exactly, you're estimating one staff. We put you on the spot and said one staff. But what would it take for us to come up with kind of a systems thinking approach of when you get that name, what are you going to do with that person? And it's great that you send them, you know, the VA magazine or whatever, but how many people are you really realistically going to need? If 1 in 10 people are veteran in this state on average, and there are 160,000 unemployed Oregonians, we can assume, you know, 16,000 of them are veterans. If there's 800,000 Oregonians on food stamps running through the DHS system, we're going to assume that there's going to be quite a few of them are coming through that are veterans. The volume that could feasibly hit your office, I think, is going to be really significant. I think it's our job to figure out what that need is going to be and come back into the 2015 session and say, here's what this ask is going to be. And knowing what other states are doing and the savings, for example, that Washington has found just in the healthcare cost alone by getting people using the PARA system moved over from DHS services up there into VA services, and it's like double-digit million savings to their general fund. There's a huge pot of money just kind of sitting there waiting for us to reach up and grab, and I think we need to sit down in, you know, 2014 interim and say, all right, what does that look like, and what's that need really going to be so we can get ODVA effectively served?
So, Chair Matthews, Representative Parrish, we're right there with you. And I think we will build multiple options depending on how the politics and the policy and the budgets all shape up. We can begin to move that way just within our existing resources. If we have a honest conversation with our counties, we've got a Salem Claims Office that could be kind of shifted into more of that peer-to-peer or leveraging, you know, what is now just one person doing training, outreach, and certification of our county partnerships. If they had a team of folks, we would be strengthening that county system that's the front door. We can do it with new resources and build that more Cadillac model and making sure that it's not just leveraging veterans and military families' goodwill, but that it is truly lined up with outcomes and performance management and holding ourselves accountable, not just because of the goodwill, but because it's driving real outcomes for our veterans and strengthening, it's not just for the troops, but it's going to be strengthening what we can then do with our state resources. And then the last one that I think in framing up that vision, there is a, the feds have their challenges, but they do have billions of dollars at their disposal. Yes, we've got sequestration and we've got larger challenges coming down the federal pike. But in the veterans military space, I don't believe that we've truly leveraged, you know, we've heard about a rural transportation grant that we have not been budgeted or staffed to be able to even go after. You know, some of that was with our retirements this summer. But that's another sweet spot where we can help our smaller counties or even our metro counties capture money that is through federal grants, but also foundation lands, and also federal agencies that want to play in this veteran space, whether it's SAMHSA or the federal US DOT. They want to play in this space and presenting good programs, whether on women, whether on rural veterans, tribal veterans, aging veterans, student veterans, world of opportunity to capture funds that I believe are left on the table right now.
Great, absolutely.
The other piece, I think, for me, what I see missing in a lot of state systems across the board, not just, you know, the veteran side of it, is that strong feedback loop that says that once the names come from this agency to you, and once you've passed it out to county or campus veteran service officer, you know, what's the mechanism to come back and see that that person got a call back in time, that they, you know, move forward somehow in the system, or they acknowledge that they don't want to move forward in the system, but that feedback and kind of closing that loop and making sure that, you know, we've done everything we can do to reach out and then calling that a closed case or whatever, that is built and baked into the system as well, because I see that as being problematic across a variety of systems, and especially then when, agency conversations, I was just with the Labor Commissioner this week on a different issue, talking about whose job is it to enforce something when there's, you know, three or four different agencies involved and everyone's like, it's not my job. So making sure that, you know, that is also cooked into the system, I think, is really
important. So Chair Matthews, Representative Parrish, we've seen that feedback loop just on the individual constituent we've been working with you on over the last 2 weeks. We are surviving on the greatness and superhuman efforts of our great team and our people, and that's a weak system to rely on and not one that is truly functional. And yes, we get excited about our larger strategic plan and our vision and how you achieve that, but much of what is transformational or will be transformational, I believe, in ODVA space is truly focusing on what are our core processes, just that one feedback loop you identified. What are the metrics that show we're hitting that? What's the process that truly, the fundamentals of what we do day in and day out, making sure that that is a clean, systemized approach. But the one thing, we are working both with those that are most challenged with their service. So often we message the negative impacts that folks have from their veterans and their military service. We're focused on the challenges that we have in providing these services. But when I went back to our state association and our fellow directors, Oregon is held up as a model of how to do veteran services. I truly believe we are one of the best veteran services agency in the nation, which is speaks again to our people. We bring back $1.9 billion. We've historically been in the top 10 in terms of disability and claims coming back. And that's the county partnerships, our partnerships across the board. But it's scary that we are one of the best Veterans Affairs in the nation, yet we see so much opportunity to grow. And I think that's a powerful model. Show that Oregon way that we've wrapped our arms around these this community, and that's going to be a model for the rest of the states to really drive on.
Absolutely. And people take a note now. Wait till, we kind of reduce that number of folks that are out there eligible that don't even know.
Hopefully this isn't all just talk and we'll actually achieve something, right?
I believe we are on the right track. Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I believe it was the committee's only been in existence maybe 8 years. Does that sound about reasonable? Maybe 10 maximum?
2005, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think somewhere like in that region. But do other states have veterans committee?
So Chair Matthews, Representative Esquivel, I'd have to double check.
I've never even heard anyone talk about it in other states.
It has been a huge center of gravity for us. It's not that this committee has sole oversight of the budget process, and often bills that touch other areas, whether education, employment, housing, originate here if they have a veterans military focus, and we've got those strong links to our other committees. And I just want to emphasize our thanks and appreciation both to the Senate and House leadership and all of your efforts. The issues, as the wars wind down, the issues will not go away. And even if we have targeted legislative or targeted budget efforts, the conversations that we're having here are empowering for our veterans and military families and will strengthen our larger agencies as well. So I encourage you to keep going.
Thank you. Representative Megan.
So just to back up a little bit, just so I actually understand, kind of go away with understanding how we are implementing this. If you can just a little bit simplistically, so obviously DHS is asking the question, which was the first step, as opposed to a passive, I pick up a pamphlet. So is that information, so obviously there's some IT database issues, so is that information, obviously the question's being asked, is there a kink in the pipeline for you getting that to ODVA, or have you gotten it to ODVA and then we're sitting on a problem of you have a bunch of names? I mean, just kind of more simplistically, help me understand how the actual bill we passed. I definitely know that we can do more and better, but I want to understand how the bill we passed is actually being implemented. Where is the problem right now?
So Representative Matthews, Vice Chair Fagan, and members of the committee, this application that you're seeing these screens, it hasn't been released yet. So we don't have the data yet to pass, but we are working very closely to pass it in whatever way they're ready to receive it.
Okay.
And Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan, we're a little bit closer to pulling that trigger with DMV, and some of the transformation efforts have been a little slower on the DHS side, but a strong partnership and commitment to get it done.
So just so I understand, so if I was to go into DHS and under the current system see a pamphlet, pick it up, and it says, you know, are you a veteran? Find out what benefits are available. And I was just to call ODVA. I'm assuming that's, you know, that happens already. That's what's already happening. So what would you do with that information? You would look them up in the system or what?
So Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan, we're overwhelmed with those calls
already. We're talking about
further. So it's truly, how do we systemize, you know, if it's going to be one guy in a seat taking all calls on that front, it's not going to work. So a lot of our, it's almost through our communications, and we've moved our IT shop under our communications shop, and they're driving a new vision of that 21st century communications. There will always be that staffing need and a peer-to-peer model that we'll move to as well, but truly trying to systemize our approach and making sure we've got that feedback loop down to leveraging our county staff as well on this front.
Okay. That helps me understand. I just wanted to understand, excuse me for engaging, sorry.
No, that's fine.
But I just kind of wanted to understand the actual bill we passed, so it's okay, I get it better now. Thank you.
And Chair Matthews, Representative Fagan, that pamphlet, you identified that as a passive. This is now kind of through their electronic claims process or their electronic question asking in terms of what they offer. It's also a voluntary option now for veterans to say, yes, I want some information from ODVA. That will transfer over electronically to us into our database side. We'll be able to control what we control in terms of that high-level outreach from ODVA in terms of here are some other options for you to then link to, but then building that stronger link to actually get them into, you know, sometimes you can't lead a horse to water, but when they are ready for that benefits and claims conversation or other resources, making sure they're tied in both to our service organizations and our ground-level county folks to get that started.
Thank you. So, Chair Matthews, members of the committee, clarifying my speaking out of turn, that was just to build the catcher's mitt for the data. Had nothing to do with all the other processes, just to build that catcher's mitt for the data.
Thank you. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question's not necessarily germane to veterans' benefits, but more, I think, in the category of why does government do some of the things it does and the manner in which it does them? I take it from the way this is worded and the discussion we just had with Vice Chair Fagan that this application is actually filled out by what I would call an intake officer. It's not necessarily the client or applicant, him or herself.
Chair Matthews, Representative Witt, that's actually not correct.
Okay.
The application will be available online for anyone to fill out 24/7. We will also have intake folks that will help the sisters if folks need it. There are field office folks that will assist. We're trying to be as broad as possible.
I see. Okay. And some of these questions, I presume, like, for instance, do you have an outstanding arrest warrant? This is... I would suspect perhaps an obligation that DHS has to not provide benefits to someone who is outside of the law. And I'm just curious, how many people answer that I have an outstanding arrest warrant or are likely to do that?
Chair Matthews, member of the committee, I have no idea.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
There are the Derwin Awards each and every year posted. Yeah. There might be some folks voluntarily submitting their name, and you see those things happen. Any further questions? And again, let me just state, Ms. Lawson, thank you for your efforts. And this is, you know, just so everybody understands too, the purpose of bringing this forward for discussion today was pretty much to let everybody know that not only did we pass legislation, but we're working on the implementation of that. And it's not a matter of we're going to hold somebody's feet to the fire. We want these state agencies to understand that we are not going to allow them to pass on this. This is more about, let's have an opportunity to discuss just what we're doing, because it really has been a very, very positive interaction. And this, as you'll hear from DMV here shortly too, and I'll again applaud their efforts. It's just awfully nice to be on the end of this to say thanks for all your work, and it's been a pleasure working with you, and I look forward to great result from this. And again, be careful what we wish for. We have to get resources to ODVA to deal with what we can only hope are going to be volumes of names of our veterans that deserve the benefit. So thank you so much. Okay, and with that, and you know, Mr. Smith, if you don't mind, you might just stay seated. Thank you, sir. And we'll bring up Amy Joyce, legislative liaison for DMV. Amy, pleasure to see you again, and thanks for joining us this morning. And I do apologize to everybody in the room and the millions of viewers at home for my delay this morning. I-205 was quite an incident. About four cars involved, not me, one of them. And hopefully everybody was okay, but it certainly delayed us on our start.
You were inclined to jump out and help and save and rescue?
Just a couple people, yes.
Chair Matthews and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, today representing the DMV and here to talk about House Bill 2421 and how we're implementing that. Thank you, Chair Matthews, for your kind words about the efforts of the agencies in collaboration with you. It really was a collaboration from the time the idea for your bill came forward to passage of the bill and now implementation. So what I will report is the basic requirements of the bill or direction from the bill is that DMV will transfer name and address information to ODVA upon a specific written request from a customer who identifies as a veteran or active member of the military. That bill becomes operative January 1. DMV is actively working with ODVA to implement that bill, working on things like computer programming, changing a lot of forms that DMV has. We have a lot of forms, several of which need to be changed so that folks can check a box or sign something indicating they're a veteran and that they do want to be contacted by ODVA for benefits. This is going to be vehicle title and registration documents, as well as one of the few services DMV offers online is vehicle registration renewal. Every 2 years, you can go online, renew your registration, actually use a credit or debit card, and then you'll be able to sort of click a button online that says, yes, I'm a veteran or active duty and want to be contacted by ODVA. That'll pass you through to ODVA so they can get exactly the information they want from that customer. Otherwise, paper forms when you're getting your driver license, renewing your driver license, your ID card, title registration, all those different transactions that DMV does. Millions and millions of transactions per year where the customer's going to have that opportunity right in front of them to check that box, sign their name, and say, yes, please provide me with that information. That is what's going on. The computer programming, again, for that online opportunity will be done and implemented by January 1, ready to go. And information will flow. Vice Chair Parrish, you asked about how frequently the information will flow. It'll be a once per month. The DMV is working out the system where, except for that online piece, where again you're going to go directly to ODVA to share the information, the contact information. DMV will gather the names and addresses of all those folks who have checked that box, put it into some sort of electronic format, and somehow electronically shoot that over to ODVA. That's all being worked out collaboratively so that that will happen once per month in sort of one big package. So that's how we're implementing the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Perry.
So, veteran comes in and they're filling out for a driver's license or plate. They're checking that box. Is there any training that's going to happen with staff for them to be able to talk to that customer about just what DMV offers. I mean, the ability to put the veteran on the license or veterans' plates if they're disabled or what have you, to make sure that they're aware of what their benefit is right there at the DMV. Because I think a lot of veterans don't know that they are eligible for some of those things as they're getting plates or disabled plates, or they can buy the Army plate, or any process thinking, system thinking there that's going to happen in terms of when somebody's reading that form and they're dealing with that person, oh, by the way, did you know you're eligible for XYZ here at the DMV?
Chair Matthews and Representative Parrish, I'm not aware that that's part of the plan, but I'm going to take that back to DMV, find out. I'll report that back to you and find out what opportunities exist right there at the counter.
Great, thank you.
And that's a very good point. And you think about the volumes of folks that come through DMV. I mean, that's what was so attractive about getting them on board early, and they just jumped right on. I mean, and again, just can't say enough great things about that. But the volume of people that come through DMV, and then those folks that are online or just, I mean, I look forward to great success, but you bring a good point about the training.
Well, can I follow up real
Absolutely.
Fast on that? And I guess my thinking behind that, I mean, besides getting people classified into the right opportunities there in any agency, but there is kind of this distrust among veterans of government, and I think that's a really, first coming through the front door opportunity to have a good, positive interaction with a government agency to a veteran, because we're specifically asking them to, give up their information and be contacted by ODVA. But if there is that kind of reach out customer service piece, they might be more inclined to actually check the box and, okay, maybe government really is interested in having a conversation with me. So I think that's an opportunity for us.
Yeah,
Chair Matthews, sure. Representative Parrish, if I may, right? And so DMV does recognize that there's that element from communications about this bill, that there's that element among some in the veteran population. And just from a purely administrative bureaucratic function, one of the things that DMV looked at was, okay, there's going to be this new box on the form. What are the questions DMV is going to get off of that? It's a typical question we'll ask ourselves when something like this comes online. And one of the things the expectation is people will ask is, well, why do you want to know? What are you going to do with that information?
That's right.
And I think that would be a great point. And so there will be, I know there will be training about that. So it will be used, sent to ODVA so they can, find out if you're eligible for something like that. That, again, is working out what that communication piece should be. So, again, DMV doesn't overpromise anything that ODVA is going to do for these folks, but that would be a natural opportunity to tag on to. ODVA is going to do this. Did you know these things are available from DMV? So that could be a natural opportunity to just, in that 5 second, here's what we can do for you right now.
That's right.
And maybe we just tell people their name will be entered in a raffle for a go to the front of the line at DMV next time you visit.
Exactly.
I'm not proposing a bill, don't you worry. Any other questions or comments for the panel?
DOJ might come down here.
Amy, again, thanks for your leadership on this. Your agency and just your involvement very early on really set the tone for everybody. And, we were always worried and concerned about the fiscal you were going to come forward with. You found a way to make this all happen. And Cameron Smith, I just know that we are in very good partnership here, as we heard also from Ms. Lawson.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, our thanks to Amy. And she's even committed to giving us a break on the constitutional requirement to only use gas tax for our highways, and is willing to chop some change over our way to continue to serve our veterans.
I am pleased to know, Chair Matthews and Director Smith, that I have the power to subvert the Oregon Constitution. So I'll take that back to my director as well. Thank you.
I'm not so sure you do, but thank you very much. And again, just really appreciate the service, and thanks for being here today. We really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And if there's nothing else on the update of the No Wrong Door Laws, we will then close our informational meeting. And yes, Vice Chair Fagan.
Chair Matthews, I move that rules be suspended and that Chair Matthews be able to vote on the rules.
Well, okay, Vice Chair Fagan has moved to suspend the rules that I be allowed to vote on the interim rules. Is that correct? Is there anybody, do I see any objection? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the rules
Let's
will be suspended.
Talk about this, Mr. Chair.
Rules are suspended, and I am allowed to vote. So, I guess, how do I vote? I will say I listened to the dialogue as my driver was bringing me here this morning, and I vote yes, of course, and thank you for that. And we will then now close the vote on the rules. Thank you very much. So formal. And anything else for the good of the order? I know some folks have things they want to talk about for perhaps the next agenda, and also moving towards February. And again, we do have committee bills. We don't have any that have been identified yet, although we may be bringing that up towards discussion. So we will start with Representative Esquivel first, and then we'll go to Representative Parrish.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things. One is that it's going to be extremely... we need to be extremely cautious and conscious of what may transpire in the future. We all remember that in the Vietnam era and the Vietnam War that we had a lot of people that had PTSD. But in Vietnam, we only served one tour usually. These youngsters today are serving three, four, and more tours. I just wonder what the long-term effect's going to be on them mentally. God, I hope we're prepared for it. The second thing is, I've discussed this with you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like the committee to think about it. I didn't know that, I guess there's a federal law, I've been told, that requires us to fly the MIA POW flag six times a year. Didn't know that. I would like verification of that if we could get it, Director Smith. But we'd also have been approached by the BFW, an individual that belongs to the BFW, and getting the support of the BFW, as well as the Purple Heart Association, State of Oregon, to maybe make a bill, produce a bill, or just have at least a public discussion in February on allowing or making it to where we do fly that flag as well. And of course my thought was, well wait a minute, you know, do we really want to do that? Well, after he told me that there's still unaccounted for about 1,500 people out there that we don't know where they're at, maybe we shouldn't forget those people. So.
And I appreciate that. And just a real quick Google assessment here states that that those dates are Armed Forces Day, May 16th, Memorial Day, as observed, May 25th, Flag Day, Army's birthday, June 14th, Independence Day, July 4th, and POW-MIA Day was September 18th, and Veterans Day, November 11th. They also urge April 9th, which historically Congress and the state legislature designated as a POW Recognition Day, and that's in California. But this is a federal law, and we'll look more into that. And I think if the committee would like to at least take that into consideration, and if nothing else, how we can heighten the awareness of that so that the state can abide and follow that. Because I agree with you, and I wasn't aware of it either. Thank you, Representative Esquivel. Vice Chair Parrish.
Thanks. Well, tomorrow's the 18th, so Sal, I give you permission to run your flag up the flagpole tomorrow on front steps. So I have three things. The first is that, as we've just had this discussion about no wrong door or opening doors, I think that kind of one of the next frontiers I'd like us to continue to consider, and we've talked about it before, is how do we find our military kids? And they're in our public schools. Oregon is now one of a handful of states that doesn't have a mechanism to find the kiddos and to provide support services. There are about 11,000 service-connected children in our state, and certainly have a lot of additional opportunities. Also going into deployment potentially again next year, I just know from having my own kids in school during deployment that schools are not necessarily equipped to handle that real well, and particularly given that those schools are not on a base or near a base. And so I just happened to be very fortunate that we had great principal who lived next door to us and teachers who were very flexible with my children. So I'd like us to think about that as potentially a committee bill. For our November legislative days, I would like us to maybe have somebody from the Employment Department. In 2011, we passed House Bill 3207, and a contact I have, who is a former National Guard soldier here who now works for the Employment Department says that 3207, in his estimation, is not being implemented properly. This was the bill that allows for a veteran who is qualified for a civil service job to receive an interview. We passed that in 2011, and his belief is that that is not being properly done and that there are people not being passed over, essentially, for interviews for positions. The last one really is not a the bill did not come through our committee in 2011. It was also a bill that passed in 2011, and it has had an unintended consequence. I can't speak this week for some reason. Stuttering a lot. House Bill 2329 was a bill about ATVs and trails, and inadvertently what's happened is disabled veterans and other people with disabilities have essentially been blocked from our public trails. So we limited and changed the size of a vehicle in this bill and what size could be out on the trails, and it probably came through, I don't know, land use or somewhere. I'd have to go back and track the trajectory of the bill and where it came. And it was, you know, a bill that kind of felt like a cleanup bill. We all voted yes on it. There was no opposition, I think, in either chamber. But the unintended consequence is when we change the size of the vehicle, that people who have modified ATVs, and particularly someone who's paraplegic or quadriplegic or, you know, needs that additional support to be able to go out and ride, those vehicles are no longer allowed on our trails. And there's a company here in Oregon that does those modifications, and somebody in my district who's not a veteran actually brought it to my attention, but I have now received emails from veterans who've been precluded from riding on our trails, and I think that's an ADA issue, certainly, but given that we've got some veterans who are coming to me with issues and complaints, and given that it is a short session and shouldn't hopefully be a difficult bill, we might have, and if we don't fill up our committee bills, and I think other committees are probably going to be filling up their committee bills, at least even if we start it here and it moves somewhere else, that would be something I'd like us to see us fix that.
I appreciate that, and I think what we'll try to do is kind of create a list of what folks would like to see as committee bills and then have kind of the committee get a good idea what we would like to move forward on. That would be one I would think would be fairly simple, and unintended consequence in addressing those. It could get complicated if there's some sort of modification you have to do to trailways, but we'll see. We'll see how things
work.
They
used to be able to ride those trails,
right?
And then they came back and
no, I understand.
Said no, so.
And I imagine I voted yes without realizing the, you know, again, the consequence. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up a little bit on Rep. Parrish's veteran applicant interview situation. ODVA helped me 2 weeks ago, roughly, had a constituent question on this and why they weren't offered a interview for a state position. And I think the bill is probably being followed in a technical sense, but I don't think they've met the spirit of it. Mm-hmm. And the situation is that oftentimes government positions, whether local or state, specify 5 years experience running a such and such. If the veteran's military job experience does not relate to the job specifications, the state and local governments do not feel that that is incumbent upon them to give the veteran a...
And to your point, Representative Huffman, we know the intent was you can't adequately put on a resume that your MOS, XYZ, whatever it was, how that translates over into another job. And so, you know, our point, I think, in passing it was we want to give people the opportunity to sit down face-to-face with the interviewer and explain that, you know, here's how this relates to this job and here's how we translate this into English. And like I said, the guy from the Employment Department is just like, that's just not happening. People aren't being given that opportunity to clarify how their military experience relates to the job, because, I mean, people don't want to lie on their resume either, but there is correlation, to I think, to a lot of the work. And so we all know what we meant. So we just need to maybe see some clarification out there.
And there was a lot of dialogue both in and outside of the public hearings about how this could be worked and what exactly the direction was. And I think the fear from a lot of folks was just any veteran would then get an interview.
Sure.
And I don't think that was the spirit of the bill. I see Mike waving his hand back there. Mike, I'll talk to you offline, right, because I want to add some comment. But I do think that that the trying to relate the experience was the biggest piece of the puzzle to qualify the veteran for the interview, so that they didn't feel compelled to interview 300 veterans that were welders for a job as a corrections officer based on their service. And yet, I think that's what the concern was back then, as I'm starting to recall. We'll revisit this, definitely, because we do want it to meet the intended target, and we'll be working with the folks and our stakeholders to include the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Counties and state and local government, absolutely. So, thank you, and we'll get some other folks involved, too. Mike, you're just going to jump out of the chair anyway, so why don't you come up and say your piece for us, since we're not on any particular subject to talk, and I'd like to hear from you, because I know that you are very, very, passionate about this issue. So go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Matthews and committee members. Yes, that's true, and I just wanted to point out...
Your name, Mike?
Didn't I give that? My name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, and I put my hand up five to Representative Esquivel, but that wasn't years. That's fifth session, going on to sixth. And I got the article out of the Disabled American Veterans Magazine in 2003, and the Veterans Committee didn't meet for almost 50 years. It reconvened in 2005. So there were a lot of Vietnam veterans who got no hearings on anything at all. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, sir. And thanks for your perspective, and thanks for your continued work. I see you're without your counterpart today.
Yeah, he's missing.
Your sidekick is missing today. Okay. Representative Huffman, did you have anything else to add beyond that? Anybody else, anything for the good of the order? I would say that, we heard today that resources are going to be an issue with this implementation of trying to get the veterans the benefits they've earned. And we may have an opportunity in February, and I want the committee to think about it, to perhaps bring forward again the lottery scratch-it. If the timing allows and we're able to do so, and we can get that through, I respect the hitch that we had at the end of last session. But rather than wait till 2015, I would like to see us try to focus on a way that maybe in 14 we can do something, because I really think this ball's rolling fast, and honestly, it's exactly what we want. We want these veterans coming forward, and if we're going to say no wrong door, we want to make sure that they don't have to wait for their answers. So that would be my goal, as it is right now in my very narrow view, trying to find a way to get to the funds that we need to help that effort. Yes.
Just to clarify, I think you mean the raffle, not scratch it, right?
Oh, not the scratch it. No,
we talked about a raffle. Right. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Scratch it, raffle. And thanks for clarifying that. Yeah, they did manage to get out one for the Halloween raffle, and I think what they've done is instead of the Thanksgiving raffle, they're now the Halloween raffle. And it has always been our goal to hit that November time frame, perhaps, to circle this thing around a known date for veterans. And so that'll continue to be the effort. I hope that we can get there. And again, Cameron Smith, I look forward to working with you to identify what would we do if we're able to give the Oregonians a chance to hit the lottery for their veterans. And I want to chat with you and certainly the committee about the opportunities out there, because I believe there are a lot of opportunities and there's tremendous need. So thank you again for everybody today. I really appreciate it. And to the committee, look forward to serving the interim again. This committee, we're blessed to have former chairs of the committee and Representative Witt and Representative Esquivel, and of course my vice chairs and Representative Huffman. Thanks for your perspective. Representative Boone is with the governor in a ceremonial signing, so I gave her a hall pass. With that, if there's nothing else for the good of the order, I thank you for attending and wish you all a good day. We are adjourned.